it is time to get powered up. You are watching Power Up. This is a weekly show that Trisha Hershberger and I decided to do and start about a month ago now. So happy anniversary to us. We're still together. So excited about it. But Power Up stands for playing, watching, reading. And obviously during lockdown, we are doing a bunch of all of those. So this Power Up is all about sharing what you are currently playing, watching, and reading. Do so in the chat. You're either watching live on Trisha Hershberger's Twitch channel, or you're watching this on Geek Bomb's VODs, or you're listening to the podcast, whatever, however, wherever you're consuming this. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. We have a rad guest. I have known our guest. Were you still a teenager? You were, since she was 18 years of age.
What? 17. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Australia is a small country.
All right, we're bringing in Alana. People. What's up, Alana?
Alana Pierce, you guys know, she started off in IGN in a big way. She moved over to Funhouse. She does amazing things in the gaming space. Really, really great to have you on board here. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, doing all right, doing the best we can. Not allowed to go anywhere, but playing a lot of video games.
Oh, that's what we want to talk about, and that's what Power Up is all about. I also like the fact that we're now evenly split with Aussies and Americans.
Yeah, true.
We totally are. Pretty soon you'll outnumber us, and that'll be fantastic. So I need to hear this story about how you guys have known each other for so long, because Alana, I didn't actually meet you until you were working at IGN, and at that point you were in San Francisco, and I think we only met in passing. Like, I was there for the day. I want to say... Correct me on my timing here, but I want to say it was 2016, and because I think I was there telling Brian and Max I was pregnant. I think I just stopped by the office to be like, yo, what up? I'm pregnant. and I think I met you in passing that day, but
that
we didn't actually get to hang out. Were
right?
you at IGN in 2016?
Yes. I think I started 2015, so yeah, I've only been in the US for 5 years, so it would make sense that we met in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
But I've been in the games industry in total. I mean, if you count me working for free and literally volunteering, it's been 9 years, which is how I know Mort.
Yeah, one of my first memories of Alana, we were doing an event for EA Games. I believe it was one of the Medal of Honors or the, They basically thought it would be really, really fun to put game reviewers through an actual army course and army training. And didn't they call me Barbie or some shit? And I was just like, don't do that.
That was such a weird event. I got a tick in the back of my neck and had to get it surgically removed.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a tick in the back of my neck that I found, because part of that, which was actually pretty cool, was we had to do sniper training. So we're going through these woods with like hacksaws and shit. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
So we're going through these woods with like hacksaws, and you have to like break trees to try and find a sniper. And then you would have to walkie-talkie someone and be like, or it was whoever your target was, maybe. You had to be like, I can see him. Yeah, you'd hold up like a number. And if he could see you, when you could see him, you'd failed. But if you could report his number without him seeing you from wherever you are in this giant bush, then you had effectively avoided him or shot him or whatever the theory was. But yeah, during that weird bush part, I got a tick in the back of my neck. And I only realized that night when I was scratching the back of my neck, and I was like, "That's what's that?" And then I pulled it and it was half a tick. But it was so deep in that they had to cut it out with a scalpel. And EA PR was like, what have we done? But it was fine. Got rid of it. Everything was okay.
You liked that, because I couldn't stand... I liked doing the, like, go camouflage. And I liked doing the, you know, we raided a particular room. Like, during a training session. The sniper one sucked. I realized really quickly I couldn't army crawl. I didn't have enough upper body strength to pull myself along the ground. And every time that I tried to move, like, I would just have a bush and, like... what are they called? Branches just rip my face apart.
What a cut.
I hated it. So I just kind of like sank into the ground and stayed there. And I think I'm the reason why the whole event went like an hour late, because I just refused to move and I refused to participate in it all. Bobby,
I'm pretty sure I won.
Bobby, come in and do it, Bobby. What's the number? And I was like, is it 7? I don't know.
So wait, what kind of event was this again? This was for games.
It was the Medal of Honor.
I did a vlog.
An actual military base.
Yeah.
They made us jump off of a boat in the Sydney Harbour right in the morning. One of the girls on the boat had her period and was like, you can't just make me jump in water. What am I going to do? And they were like, too bad, get off. We were like, what?
But they immediately treated us like we were in the army. And like, yeah. I do not respond well to being called Barbie and being yelled at when I didn't really sign up for it. Like,
it was weird.
The army, it's like, you're signing up for the experience.
They called me Asthma. That was the nickname they gave me.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, because I can't run.
Inhaler.
Yeah, because I had an asthma attack when we were supposed to be doing drills.
Yeah. So you were
it was a weird event. Yep.
How long did you have to like train in the army for?
Oh, it was just a half day event.
Yeah, maybe like 5 hours.
They took us through 3 particular drills, and one of them was fine, and one of them, like the sniper one, I was just furious. I gave up.
Okay, 2 more questions. Were you expected to create content from this event? And if so, where can we find it online?
I'm pretty sure I did. I may have deleted all like a bunch of videos that I did in the early stages of Geek Bomb because the quality was just terrible. But I think
that the intent was we did all that stuff and then we'd play the game. And the idea was that we would cover it. I think I did on the radio. I was on a radio show in Brisbane. So I think that I spoke about it there. But I think EA had the footage and used it on, like, Facebook ads or something.
Yeah, that maybe. Sounds about right.
It was weird.
And I also appeared when I was in Brisbane back home for a chunk of time. You were like, come on the radio show. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. It's fine. That show's still going. Shout out to Zed Games.
That's really cool.
Yeah. That is so cool. So, Alana, how does one get started in their teenage years working on the radio? How did that happen for you?
So I wasn't – oh, maybe I would have been. I probably would have been 18 when I started working on the radio. I mean, I started as a writer. Just completely volunteering for tiny websites no one's ever heard of, which happened just because I've always loved writing and I've always loved video games. So I, at a certain point, it occurred to me that I could pair the two of them. So I was a freelance writer for, I think, 2 years before I started doing freelance video hosting. Sorry, not freelance. I keep saying freelance. That came eventually, but it was literally for free volunteer work. And then I slowly, like, this is the truncated version, worked my way up to getting paid. The radio thing came in a really similar way. It was like, at first I started doing it for free because I just really wanted to. I was like, I've hosted this stuff. I've written this stuff. I've worked for these people. Let me do this, please. And I found, I was going to actually pitch it to the community radio. But then I found a show that already existed in Brisbane, which wasn't too far from my home. So I started working for them for free before we finally got a government grant. And I started getting paid for that. So my entire career has been a series of, I will do this thing for free until I have the experience or feel confident enough with my skills that I can actually pitch it on a professional level. And that's what I've done pretty much every step of the way.
The version as well that Alana's probably not going to tell you, but she definitely experienced in Australia, is that the gaming industry is so small that if anyone who's a little bit more established feels threatened by you, and people who had just kind of like entered the arena and the space and felt that their position was really hard to come by and they didn't want to lose it, someone who's 18 or 19 who's like super about this and wanting to do a lot in the space, and if that attitude kind of rubs someone the wrong way, they could really easily make it very, very difficult for you to succeed in Australia.
Oh, they tried, but they failed.
Yeah. There's a reason
they
why
certainly tried.
Alana and I are both in America, by the way, guys.
Yeah, the Australian industry's tiny. Some amazing stuff. I mean, I'm so proud of the Australian game dev scene. Like, the games we make in Australia are incredible. I mean, House recently just cleaned up with Untitled Goose Game. That's an entirely Melbourne-based team. So, or maybe they're Sydney, but I'm pretty sure they're definitely Australian either way. Australia, yeah, a lot of great games. Yeah, the industry itself on the media side is just so tiny.
Yeah,
that things definitely felt dramatic compared to the US industry, which is way bigger. And I've not had any drama at all with anyone.
Mate, I'm a vegetarian. There has been no beef. No beef.
It's so nice.
Wait, are you both being sarcastic, or has there legit been no beef since you got here?
No, none. Literally,
the difference between what would happen in Sydney and what would happen here is night and day. Like,
yeah,
wow.
I think in Sydney, people were kind of waiting for you to put a toe wrong so that they could cut you down, or so they could be like, they're a fraud, or they don't deserve to be here, and I'm so great, and this is why I should be doing it.
Is tall poppy syndrome a thing in the US, or is that just in Australia? Do you guys know what tall poppy syndrome is, Amy and Trisha?
No.
So it's basically when it's an Australian cultural thing. I think it kind of happens in the UK too, where basically if someone gets too big or is too successful, everyone else in Australia just fucking hates them. It's this like huge problem that we have with anytime someone has any success, you have to try to tear them down. Where we love an underdog. But no one can ever stay an underdog forever.
The poppy is a flower where they obviously like grow tall to reach the sun. But like a lot of the time in poppy fields, one will shoot up. So the whole tall poppy thing is, it's like, if you grow too tall, yeah, the rest of you have to cut them down to be with everyone else. And a lot of the time in Australia, people did not like my success. So if I got a job, people would be mad because it was me and not them, but they actually probably didn't have any experience or weren't the right fit for it. And I remember-
Or didn't apply. I had that. Yeah. Someone didn't apply for something and got mad that I got it. And I was like, I literally submitted an application.
I remember when I was at Nickelodeon and I was telling a friend, I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to move on. I don't know if I'll do it anymore. And she's like, can I have your job? And I was like, whoa, that's not how it works. And they were like mad at me that I didn't give them, like I was giving a gift out of my pocket, you know?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Someone... It's so different based on location, because I mean, I know, and Maude and I have talked about this before, but Ilana, I'm sure you can probably vouch for this too. Every now and then, you run into a person that I feel like is incredibly competitive about their career and is maybe interested in like starting some drama on the side or something like that. But at least in my experience, it has been incredibly rare. And I find that a lot more of the people I work with are like the relationship that I have with Maude or you, Ilana, where it's like, we're all very different. If someone is looking for like the face of a show or something like that, there's a very different show between a Trisha Hershberger gaming show, an Ilana Pierce gaming show, a Maude Garrett show. You know, and it just depends what kind of show they want to produce. It's nothing personal against any of us. You know,
I would always just celebrate people.
It's your show or it's not.
Getting an opportunity.
Oh, but the thing is though, Trish, you just named the fact that there were four different shows available. In Australia, there was one gaming show that was on TV. One. And a lot of like the hosts had been there for quite some time and they weren't going anytime soon. So there was just no work. So as soon as a job opened up, it became, that's why it was so competitive. And I think that, you know, with all these opportunities in LA, that's why it's all like, I don't think I'm the right fit for this one, but let me introduce to you a friend of mine who's absolutely going to crush it. And it is a lot more interchangeable because there are so many more options. And I think that that is, again, a huge reason why Lara and I moved over here, because I was told by my agent to not talk about Star Wars anymore because it would actually eliminate 40% of the jobs available because I would be a little bit more too geek to be mainstream.
What?
Nuts.
Yeah.
That's anyway. Absurd. That's absurd.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay,
so, Ilana, when did you then decide to make the move?
I was technically a contractor, but a full-time contractor for a startup that was a Netflix type in Australia, hosting a daily gaming show. I was making a ton of money and really enjoyed it, but was not at all challenged. So ultimately, it was always part of my long-term goal to end up at IGN or GameSpot in the US, because I figured those were like the pinnacle of the games media career, which is what I've been pursuing. You know, I studied journalism and mass communication. So that was always like what I was heading towards. And it did maybe take me a little while to figure out that I had to move to the US to like really be at the forefront of the games industry or games media side of things. So when I was working at this particular job on TV in Australia, I was hosting for the radio at the same time, was writing for a couple of Australian magazines. I just sort of got to a point where I was like, this is it. I can't, there is nowhere further for me to go whatsoever in the Australian industry. So yeah, I actually transferred, finished the last 6 months of my degree in a California university so that I could meet people working in the California games industry, knowing I'd have to move to San Francisco probably. Did that, applied for the job that I applied at, did apply for one at IGN and at GameSpot, but GameSpot told me they couldn't afford my visa. IGN could, and it was probably a more fitting job anyway. So that's basically how that went down. It was a very structured plan. I was like, I will do exactly these things to get here. And I did. And it's crazy. I actually have this diary entry from maybe like 7 years ago. I have this diary that I've kept up to date with every now and then that says, I'm going to get a job at IGN in San Francisco, and then I'm going to work for Rooster Teeth. And I did exactly that.
Yay! I think that's such an incredible thing to have, like, a goal that is so tangible and it absolutely exists. Like the role is there, the companies are there, and you know, this is my goal and this is how I'm going to get there. And I envy the people that have that, because I don't know what my goal is.
I don't now either.
Just to keep working. I moved over to America with a job in radio, and I did radio for my first 2 years over here, and like was in the celebrity world and doing red carpets. And so like the shift for me has been really, really interesting, but I've never known where I'm going, and you can't really go somewhere if you don't have the direction. And I found that like my career has just hopped all over the place instead of just being like zoom. And I've had a my best friend Alicia Malone. She's been the same TCM, 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 and she's now a host on TCM. And she's like, I just knew that every step that I had to take, I knew the direction that I was going. So I was never kind of taking any jobs or anything that wouldn't take me directly towards my goal. And her suggestion is to have a goal. And I'm like, my only goal is to work less, earn more, travel on someone else's dollar.
Yeah. I mean, look, I had that plan and then I executed the plan by the time I was 25, which now means I'm like, well, what the fuck do I do now? Because I expected it to take me a bit longer, but I was so driven towards it that it happened. But now I'm like, I have no fucking idea what I'm doing or what I want to do next. Or whatever. Happy with what I am doing, but I it does feel weird to not have a goal now that I've achieved the ones that I had planned to. I'm just like, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you Who doing knows? Now? Tell people what they can catch you in.
Well, I'm a producer at Funhouse, which is a Rooster Teeth brand where we make a bunch of dumb comedy gameplay videos. I also work with Inside Gaming, which was owned by Machinima originally. The Inside Gaming team left and made Funhouse, and then Rooster Teeth bought the leftovers of Inside Gaming when Machinima closed, so we now own Inside Gaming again. So that too, which is the media brand for Rooster Teeth now, after the No ended and wrapped up. So I work for both of those outlets, but also just do a bunch of stuff on my own. I have a podcast called Play Watch Listen, which is myself, Troy Baker, Austin Wintery, and Mike Bithell talking about games industry stuff all the time, and then just like a bunch of YouTube stream bullcrap that I do occasionally when I want to, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, everyone should listen to Play Watch Listen, by the way. It's absolutely fantastic. And like the panel of people you've chosen are so well-rounded and so diverse that it's a must listen, in my opinion.
Thank you. Honestly, if nobody else listened to that show, I would still make it because A, I love that I get to hang out with those people for an hour or two every week, and B, I learn so much that I didn't know from them all the time that I'm like, I could just not even publish the show and I would still love listening to it.
Roy's one of the best storytellers I've ever come across. Like, he's
I know, he's so impassioned. Yeah. About everything. It's incredible. Yeah. Wonderful man.
We have a little segment now, though, called Blast from the Past, and we kind of go through each of the things in gaming, watching, and reading to figure out when something really, really big first came out this week-ish. So it's a blast from the past.
Oh, okay,
Amy,
I see.
Amy, you here to do that for us? Yeah, terribly described, but Amy will do it. Sorry.
That was good. That was good. Yeah, I'll be giving you guys three properties, one in each category. So in the playing category, can't believe it's been 9 years since Cards Against Humanity first came out.
No way.
So, yeah, a month after it was released, it became the number one game on Amazon. This was the 1.0 version, which no longer exists. At the time, it had 550 cards, 460 were black and 90 were white. This all started through a Kickstarter, which it's like, wow. Because I love it. How do you guys feel about
it? It started through Kickstarter, and you could actually download and print out the cards for free in the beginning.
Yeah.
They weren't even charging for it. It was donation only.
Isn't
that
crazy?
You had to cut them yourself and stuff. Yeah. I mean, I loved Cards Against Humanity when it came out. I don't think I played it in about 5 years. And I actually wonder if that game would be able to come out now. Is it, I know it was marketed as being controversial and inappropriate, and I never felt like it was that bad, but I know that there have been some pockets of people finding it, like, really politically inappropriate from time to time. None of them really were taken seriously, but I wonder now if people would have a massive problem with Cards Against Humanity, or if it's, like it is in my head, a game that is pretending to be more offensive than it actually is.
And it depends who you're playing it with. Because how you play the cards can make it more or less politically.
Yeah, it's kind of up to you, right?
Actually,
my parents always wanted
to
play it with me.
Yeah, I played with my family about 5 years ago, which would have been the last time unless we did it at SourceFed. And turns out my dad is just wicked. I didn't realize it. Like, he's such a really, really lovely, gentle man. But then he'd kind of put something down where it was like, I fucked your grandmother up the ass. And he'd be like, Dad! And he's like, oh. He just cleaned us up. It was amazing.
Sometimes it's kind of the best when someone who's very sweet gets behind a game like that that only gives them the option to say things that are fucked up, and you see the side of them that they don't usually have. It's
that
the best.
In a monologue where they're like, ugh.
You had it in you.
By the way, my example was awful because it meant that he was having sex with his own mum or stepmum. Or
did
like
occur to me,
yeah. Yeah, whoops.
Yes.
There you go. I just wanted to clarify that. That was not the example. That was all I got.
If you guys want to play now, you actually can. You can play right now. That's available. You can play online, even though we're all socially distancing. So keep that in mind. Yeah. Moving on to the watching category. It's a horror movie. But it's okay. It's all right, Ma. You're safe. Let's see. Here's a hint.
Oh.
Good hint.
Friday the 13th. Thank you. Thank you. So on May 9th, 1980, Friday the 13th came out. It currently has a 62% on the tomato meter.
10 years ago, I was like, that's older than that. What are you talking
Hold
about?
Hold on. Wait a second. Yeah. No, it's been, I know math. That's not right. 50 years?
No. 1980?
40 years.
It's not 2030.
40.
That's math. You know, what is math? So, yeah, it has a 60% audience.
Are you born in the 90s? That's why. Is that what? Yeah, there it is.
I'm like, time is just so weird. But yeah, I'm a massive fan of Friday the 13th, massive fan of horror movies, so can't believe it's been 40 years.
Yes.
Keeping well done.
You were quick with that.
That's fine. I know. What's our blast from the past reading?
The first Hulk appearance happened in May of 1962, it's a lot more years. Not going to do math.
That is several years.
So it's a lot. But yeah, created by writer Stan Lee, of course, and artist Jack Kirby. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's been really that cool. long.
Maybe oh, like Stan Lee old. Had a bad day and he was like, you don't want to see me angry.
Wait a second. Yeah. There's something there. But yes, that's our blast from the past.
No way.
Cool. All right. Thank you so much, Amy. That was awesome.
Great little interview there with Alana. Fantastic that we are able to do a blast from the past. The next thing that we'll be tackling is what Alana is playing. But before we jump into that, goodbye, because this will be a self-contained segment on Geek Bomb. And Trisha, you want to give shout-outs to your wonderful new subs and bit givers and dragon riders.
Yes, awesome. Well, thank you everybody for watching the interview and blast from the past portion of the show. So many things happened during the show, and normally I have little alerts that pop up on screen with lovely little sound effects from the Darkest Dungeon video game that pop up whenever we get a new sub or something like that. But I have them turned off for power up because this is going to go in a podcast and, of course, VOD on Geek Bomb as well, and that might be slightly distracting. I personally love it, but I totally get it. So now is the portion where I thank everybody for being an awesome human being. So let's see. Oh my goodness. I'm going to work backwards. So thank you for the follows. Green Lantern 957, Kinghawk 3000, Screw Monkey, Diagnage 117. Joker Joe gifted, I think, 11 subs through all that. Thank you so much, Joker Joe, and welcome to the Dragon Rider Army, everyone. Thank you, Master Aponte, for the follow. Very Naked, thank you for the follow. Morty Jenkins, Ojelano, thank you guys, welcome. Adventure in Life, resubbed for 12 months. Happy subiversary. Thank you so very much. And says, so thankful for being a part of this great group of people. Gotta have some laughs, some fun, and found out about a lot of cool games and geeky gear. This Dragon Rider is here to stay. Thank you so much. That means the world. That Other Rock resubbed for 4 months. Hi, back at you. So did Veins of Games. Veins Soft Games, I should say. Resubbed as well. We've got... I'm sure it's something backwards, isn't it? It's something backwards. Thank you for the follow. And Classy and Arvin, thank you for your generous donations. You're amazing. In my Discord today, I was saying that I had a really hard work day today. Anyone who donated, I'm sure that's the conversation it came out of, and I really appreciate you. So thank you. Everyone's going through tough times right now, and as much as we can all be here for each other, even in a digital format, I think that that's super important. So thank you all very much, and welcome. And now, let us move into the playing portion of the show. Oh, actually, before we do that, Maud, we've got a lot of Dragon Riders here in chat. How can people support Geek Bomb?
Yeah, we're doing a bunch of cool stuff with Geek Bomb's Patreon. If you jump onto patreon.com/geekbomb, we've actually just been made the official after show for Nerdist Book Club. We're covering June at the moment, but after the show, we're actually all jumping on to do a quick Q&A with Rachel Hine, Hector Navarro, and myself every single week, which is super, super cool, and that's the lowest tier. We've got an amazing Discord there as well. We're going to shuffle things up in the next couple of weeks to make it even better. But yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. Just check it out. And obviously we love your support, and your support is the reason why this show exists and that we can still go and that I can pay people during a technical like recession/end of the world, crazy, extreme time. So thank
you. Yes. Keep the payroll going. Ridian in chat says the name should be Dragon Bombers. And I like that a lot.
That's really good.
The ship name is Dragon Bombers. I dig
it. What are you doing? Poor dragons. Leave my, I'm kidding. Dragon bombers.
I picture it's the dragons dropping bombs, not that we're actually bombing dragons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I pictured like a dragon's there, and it, instead of a pokeball, it was a grenade, and I was like, I choose you! That's why, people don't ask me to answer things. Hey, let's move on to playing.
Huzzah! All right, well, everybody, welcome to Power Up. This is the playing section of the show with Maude Garrett and myself, Trisha Hirschberger, and we have a very, very special guest today that we are chatting with. Alana Pierce is here today, everybody.
Hi!
Oh, hey, there she's down the bottom there. We're talking about what you're currently playing. Do you have more or less time now that we're in quarantine, and what has been piquing your interest in terms of games out there?
I have roughly the same, maybe a little bit less time, because there's so many technical issues with setup, with shooting stuff at Funhouse, that's taking up a significant portion of time. Hard to answer. I don't know. It depends on the day. But I am finding a lot of time to sneak in Animal Crossing. There have been plenty of instances where I've been on a podcast and just playing Animal Crossing also on my PC next to the podcast window at the same time, and nobody knows. Not doing that right now. Hands are free. I'm not holding any joke. I swear. But usually I'm on it. But yeah, a lot of Animal Crossing. I did play New Leaf, but New Horizons, I think because of the time it came out, I mean, I think Nintendo just released sales and it's doing incredibly well. It really, really, really grabbed me.
It just
crazy. I played New Leaf maybe like 40 hours, whereas I think I'm at about 200 of New Horizons. I'm just playing the hell out of it.
New Leaf. Yeah, it was cute. It was fun, but it didn't have that community like gravitas that this has had because everyone's at home. And like the turnip thing is becoming almost volatile.
Yeah. Yeah, I slept through turnip time this week. I slept in past 12, missed turnips. It's changed my whole week. I feel like I'm irrelevant in conversations, in my text threads. Nobody cares. I'm on the outside now. This is how it must feel for everyone who doesn't have Animal Crossing.
Shout out to April, who works at Geek Bomb, who told me when her turnips were 565. You made me half a meal. Thank you.
Nice. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I have a lot of like issues with Animal Crossing. There are a lot of quality of life improvements that I would love to see. There are things that annoy me. Like, I just don't understand why, you know, the camera functionality is clearly there because you can move the camera if you're in a house. Why can't I just move the camera when I'm on my island?
Yeah.
If I'm outdoors.
The amount of fruit hidden behind trees.
Yeah, I just have so much stuff on my island. I think I've been at 5 stars for like 3 weeks now. So it's so packed. And some of the time it takes me forever to find where my fossils are because I am looking for that little marking on the ground, but it's behind a tree.
Yeah.
Which is a huge bummer. It's just a lot of like minor things like that. Like, I wish you could craft more than one item at a time. I wish it were easier to aim your slingshot for the presence in the sky. Just like tons of stuff that I feel like could be refined. And man, does it drive me nuts building a bridge and then wanting to move it just one square over and having to wait like several days and pay so much freaking money to do that. But for the most part, I love any game where I get to design a town. It doesn't grab me in a way that's like, you know, a lot of people don't get why Animal Crossing is popular. It doesn't grab me in a way that it's because it's cute. It gets me in the same way that Minecraft does, mm-hmm. where I'm like, let me create this city that I'm crafting towards.
I need a little bit more of a payoff if I'm going to drop 110,000 bells on a shower. Let me get in there and clean. If I'm going to buy a baking set, let me fucking bake.
It sucks that you can't interact with like the playground stuff. It's like the slide. Hmm. Yeah.
I'm doing so much work to get it in there. No one can use it.
Yeah.
Now, as someone who's not playing Animal Crossing, I'm like the only person on the planet, and it's because I was playing Ori and the Will of the Wisps all the way up till Final Fantasy VII Remake came out. right? So, like, I beat Will of the Wisps right before Final Fantasy came out, and now I'm playing Final Fantasy. So Animal Crossing just hasn't had a place in my life. But as someone who loves resource management and simulation games, how would you say Animal Crossing differs from, like, The Sims?
It's tough in that, look, it is that kind of game, but I feel like Animal Crossing is a forcibly more casual version of that, in that you don't have a choice but to do everything more slowly, especially when you get into the later game. Like, The Sims is the kind of game that you can play 6 hours in one day and still, you know, go to sleep, wake up the next day and be like, there's so much more I have to do. Whereas Animal Crossing, a lot of the time, forces you to stop production or you run out of things to do. Like, right now I'm having this issue where I can't play as much because I have everything that I want. All I really want is more DIY recipes or different items, which is just a kind of a randomized waiting game. Whereas things like The Sims, you can kind of produce forever. So the resource management stuff, yeah, is a factor, but same token, once you played a certain amount of time, gets too easy. Like, I guess kind of similar to Minecraft, where if you want to set up your machines to mine things for you, that part gets really simple. But Minecraft, it doesn't feel like you ever run out of stuff to build, whereas Animal Crossing is a bit more limited than that.
Requirement. Remember when you were playing Wii and it's like, hey, we've noticed you've been playing a while, how about you go outside?
Yeah.
You know, like, the Japanese culture is trying to initiate people to just put it down and stop playing for a little bit, hence I think that gameplay process. But I would say that Animal Crossing is more meditative.
Yeah.
It's more unwinding. It's more relaxing. It's more like, honestly, I use it sometimes to meditate because it can be really mundane and basic in the sense that I'm catching a butterfly, I'm picking up a seashell. And so it's really quite calm. Whereas I find SimCity is actually quite adrenaline inducing.
Mm.
The time's going. You have to get things happening. It's all up to you. So, like, the kind of like sensory reactions to these games are different.
I get it.
Yeah, Animal Crossing's way more chill.
That's my two cents. Also, if you scroll back to about 2.5 minutes ago, you'll notice the point where Zelda fell asleep on my foot. It's really sweet, but I can't.
Now everybody has to rewind and do that. I mean, this is a stream, so don't do it live, but do it on the VOD and keep on later. Alana, I also wanted to ask you, you said you're playing The Outer Worlds right now, and I'm so surprised you didn't play it earlier.
I did. I just went back.
Okay.
Yeah, so I already played Ori, and I played Final Fantasy. Still dabbling with that, but, you know, I've seen the ending and everything. So I just smashed through games, really. I loved Ori. Just so, I could talk about that forever. It's so good. Everyone play Will of the Wisps. It's fantastic.
Yep,
Did it still have frame rate issues when you finished it, Trisha? Because I feel like I finished it maybe, like, before it came out. Maybe day off.
I didn't really notice many frame rate issues. I mean, there were definitely a couple parts when I was playing the game on PC where I encountered some game-breaking bugs and had to, like, exit out and get back in.
Yeah, bummer.
But again, I was playing on PC, so I don't know if other platforms handled the game differently, but you experienced issues when you played?
Major, yeah, which sucks because it was the only thing that I didn't like about it was just frame rate drops pretty frequently. A huge bummer. I did stream it once and I had one of the devs in my chat saying, we're hoping we can fix this. So hopefully they're still working on it because it's a game that I want to recommend to everyone. But until those improvements come into play, you might have game breaking bugs, which is a huge bummer.
You might. But, yeah. I had to exit out of the game and, like, load a previous save. And it was like one whole section of the map that just treated me like I was in a cutscene. So I couldn't warp anywhere and I couldn't jump. And get out of that portion of the map, I needed to jump. So I was just kind of stuck in this portion. It was very bizarre.
Not ideal for a platformer.
Not ideal for a platformer. It was very weird. But I really enjoyed the story. I thought the soundtrack, obviously, and the art style were just stunningly beautiful.
And it's so pretty. Oh, man.
Go play Ori.
I love Ori. I would die for Ori. Really, I would. But yes, The Outer Worlds. I really like this game in a way that I don't actually, you know, it came out October? I don't remember when it came out even. Now that I'm playing it again after launch, it's funny. Some of the stuff that I've seen people saying about it. What I really like about this game and what I liked when I first previewed it is it's very much RPG heavy, almost in a tabletop way. It's very, very heavy on your stats. Letting you, you know, customize charisma, but then there are three points of charisma. I think it's persuasion, lie, and intimidate. Yeah, but then it lets you like individually customize those when you get to a certain point and level those up. And I'm super into that side of this game, how stat heavy it is. It really does feel like a more Fallout New Vegas thing than Fallout 4 feels like. So I'm a huge fan of that, but I also just love the dialogue and how each side quest and town feels like it has its own fully fleshed out story. It's so easy to get very engrossed in this game, and in a period of time where I feel like there's a lull between new game releases, The Outer Worlds is just a very good one to play to get very lost in a much more exciting world than our own right now, considering we're not going anywhere.
And it's you can finish it in about, what, 30, 35 hours? It was a quick game, wasn't it?
I think if you just want to do the campaign, it's more like 10. Like, I think it's pretty short if you just want to smash through it. But yeah, really? I'm currently doing
the main quest, the side stories.
I'm doing every side quest right now. And yeah, it's supposed to be about 40. So yeah, I really like it.
I'm about 15 hours in, but I'm a completionist and have to do every side quest. Plus, I'm god awful at all shooters. So I would definitely never finish that game in 10 hours.
I felt this shooter was okay, because I'm the same. I'm not usually good with shooters, but like when it's something like when you can alternate between particular different weapons. Like,
I'm just avoiding all the combat because I think it's the worst part of the game. So if I can avoid it, I'll sneak around it or I'll talk my way through it. But when I have to shoot stuff, I just have a grenade launcher and I just blow everyone up.
I go into slow-mo and I do headshots.
Tactical time dilation.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I don't use that at all. I'm not good at it. I'm going to try Alana's strategy of just talk your way through every encounter and you'll be fine.
Blow them up if you can't. Yeah, it works.
It is time to get into the question portion, though. Amy does a little something called Bombs Away. What's some of the questions that we can all answer? And I know we're already running a little bit over time, so we're going to pop, punch it out.
Mm-hmm. We're going to power through it.
Nice.
Thank you. So we will also be taking a few questions from you guys over here on Twitch if you're watching right now, which you are because you're watching us right now. And first, I'm going to get this one from Nathan Swap, who's a bomber backer. He asked, do you prefer establishing D&D world campaigns to play in or the less polished homebrews?
I've never played D&D, so...
We gotta get you playing D&D!
Yeah, I've always wanted to, and have almost twice, but schedules didn't work out, so I've never played D&D.
No, well, it does take a lot of time, which is something that someone as busy as you, Alana, probably does not have, like, a good 4 to 6 hour chunk to sit down and play. But
no, not really. But I'd love to, though.
If you can at any point, it's so fun. Mm. This shirt I'm wearing right now says... Awesome Moms Explore Dungeons and Slay Dragons, and it is
nice.
Very niche. I mean, if you know a mom,
I've played
who
a
plays
lot of
D&D
adjacent stuff, and I can say one of the MMOs that I got the most into was Neverwinter, which is basically D&D MMO, and it was very cool. You could actually make quests in Neverwinter, like making your own campaign in D&D, which I loved. So that's like the closest I got to that. I'm very excited about Baldur's Gate 3 for a similar reason, but I've never played actual D&D, so I can't answer this one.
Yeah, right. I'm actually a bit confused with the question where it's like, would you rather create a D&D thing or homebrew? Homebrew is creating your own D&D thing, so it's actually a bit of a malaprop.
Well, I feel like the question, though, is like, do you want to play Pathfinder? Do you want to play, standard D&D 5th edition? Or do you want to completely homebrew your own setting?
Oh, ¿por qué no los dos? Why not both? I do both. So I play 5th edition as a player, as a DM, and then I also created my own homebrew version where it was just throw out the rule book. And if you dream it, you can do it. So with Dungeons and Flagons, which, Trisha, you've been on both versions, where it was source-fed D&D and when it was Dungeons and Flagons. So you know that batshit craziness that happens with that.
That is very homebrewed.
Alana, the group I am DMing at the moment, Robbie Buckley's in it, which I think is really
cool. Oh, cool.
Small world. Nice. Huh? He's really into it. He's good. I'm creating a monster and I love it.
All right, next
one day.
Question that we have is from Twitch. From L_Efron, I haven't played since Sega's Genesis, but quick question. Would you suggest I try PC or console gaming as my reintroduction into playing? Ooh.
Oh, man.
PC or console?
I
also,
always...
porque los dos.
Yeah. Wait, what do you say, Alana? What's your answer there?
Both. Pasta, am I right?
I do both. Yeah, I know. People mod all the time. People go, you speak Spanish? I'm like, just that one sentence from that one ad.
We had porque El Paso. Los dos. Is a they're supposed to be like the only sort of Mexican food brand in Australia, but I'm pretty sure like 60% of Australia call it a quesadilla. So
yeah. Guacamole. Mexican food in Australia is not good, and I didn't know that until I moved here.
I know. Oh my
God, like,
I know.
This is Mexican. Oh my God. But yeah, I have always played on both PC and console, literally my whole life. I started playing PC and then got a 64 recently after that, and continued to play on both and have my whole life. So I still do, and I like it a lot. Gives you a lot of variety. A huge benefit to playing on console is that most people have consoles, so it's very easy to, like, I always play Apex with friends in Australia, or that's how I started at least. So that was one that I kept on Xbox because that's what platform they were on. So I just try to stay on absolutely everything if I can, if you have the option to.
I think you're asking the wrong person, because I also have all the consoles and I'm back into PC gaming. I took 12 years off PC because of World of Warcraft. Screw you, time suck. It got me bad. So I left my PC on the side of the road and called it a day. But I've just got a brand new, thank you to Alienware, new gaming laptop. And I'm trying to get back into PC. Trisha is literally my tutorial, because every time I'm like, how do you, because I've macked everything. I've been like the Mac Trilogy, which was MacBook, Mac.
Don't worry, girl. I got everything. You. And we'll get you up in Twitch streaming soon enough. I'm such a like diehard PC gamer that like I also have consoles, but that is only my backup if something's wrong with my PC, or like I'm rebuilding my PC, or I'm modding it and I'm having to troubleshoot or something like that. But since you say you haven't played at all since Sega Genesis, one of the really nice things I would say about playing on a console is all the games are designed for that specific piece of hardware. So you're not troubleshooting as much as you might have to on a PC, figuring out if your hardware specs can run a specific game, or if you do have to troubleshoot where that troubleshooting might be, messing with registry files, that kind of thing. You won't have to deal with any of that with a console for the most part. And so maybe coming from a Sega when times were simpler, as they say, you might want to stick with console, but I always prefer PC. I like that you can upgrade it yourself. If you do have a game that's a little more taxing, instead of having to buy an entire new console, you can just upgrade a component or something like that.
Get that ray tracing. Have you seen Minecraft? Oh, goddamn.
Minecraft and ray tracing, Control with ray tracing, deliver us the moon with ray tracing. Ray
so,
tracing
nice.
It's yeah. So nice. It's so nice. It's so nice. But yeah, thank you for that question, Ella Efron, and I wish you happy gaming. I'm excited for you.
That is the peek and don't put component done. Thank you so much for watching the playing section. Watching and reading is still to come, so we're going to call it right now, but don't go anywhere. We are three parts, and we're only a third of the way through. So, yeah, watching will happen very soon.
See you soon. Okay, and in the meantime, in the commercial break, want to say a huge thank you to PSWE, who gifted a sub. You're awesome. Classy librarian, thank you so much for the bits. Welcome and thank you, everybody, for the new follows. Sage4 with the super generous donation. What would my normal alert would say? A magnanimous dispensation. So that was my notification for you, and thank you for your magnanimous dispensation. Thank you. That's really very generous. Thank you for the resub, GDOK. Welcome and thank you to all of the new followers. And I believe that catches us up. You guys are rock stars. We will now move into the watching portion of the show. Maud, if people want to see these after the fact or they want to support the show financially, how can they do that?
You can watch all these videos on youtube.com/geekbomb. Give that a sub, because the subs are all over the place all the time, and it would mean a lot to reach 100,000 for the fifth time.
Ooh. Oh, because yeah, that's my Twitter right now. My Twitter is like 180. Oh, back down to 179. Oh, 180. Back down to 179. You know,
my Insta's doing that as well at the moment, and I'm like, don't shame me publicly, please.
I did hear, if it makes you feel any better, Maud, I did hear from a friend of mine who works on the back end of social media. He was telling me that a lot of the different platforms are going through and really deleting bot accounts right now in this time, because they have the time to focus on it. So it might. It might be that that's more to blame. So give yourself a break.
Zelda just woke up, by the way, like suddenly. But my foot is no longer a pillow. That's the update that you are all waiting for. All right, watching, let's go.
Do it, Maud.
Woo, it's time for watching. This is the W part of playing, watching, and reading, which is the acronym that makes power up. What's up? My name is Maud Garrett. You are joined by Trisha Hershberger. We have a guest on today who soups into playing. Have you watched that part? If so, yay. But now it is time to do watching, because there is so many hours in the day that after we've finished playing, we can jump on and either watch a movie or a show. So we've got Alana Pierce here to tell us what she's currently watching. Hey, Alana.
Hi. Look, I don't do a lot of watching because I do a lot of playing. So I don't watch a lot of TV really at all. It's like a spot that I've missed. So I actually, just since lockdown started, or maybe it was a little bit beforehand, started watching the US version of The Office. Smashed through that. Feel like I should give that a quick shout. Yes, I'm on season 8 now, and there have been like some highs and lows. Season 8 is not grabbing me a ton so far, but yeah. So for the most part, have very much enjoyed it. Watched a lot of Forensic Files. Good stuff. But yeah, I also started watching The Clone Wars, which
for the first time.
Yes, I'm on season 5, I believe.
My first question with Clone Wars, are you watching it in the chronological order or are you watching it in the released order?
I am watching it in the released order, which I know people suggest doing it the other way around, but yeah, wow. I'm cool with the orders that it's in. Yeah. And I actually skipped the entirety of season 1 by public recommendation. And have not found that I missed any gaps because of that. I'm not having any issues understanding that really at all. Because I know people say that like season 1 has a lot of growing pains. People have trouble getting into it. So I started from season 2 and yeah, I like it a lot.
It's great, huh?
Yeah, it's really, really, really good. And I keep being like, how is this for children? There's so much dark stuff that people get decapitated. There's all this like torture. Like it's not a kid's show.
No, I was going to ask you that, Alana, because I have not introduced my tiny human to Star Wars yet, but there are a lot of people out there that are like, the Clone Wars is a great way to introduce your tiny human to Star Wars. But I know so many adults that like are very into dissecting it at like a very heady level. Would you recommend this for children? Do you think this is a kid's show?
Maybe season 1, but otherwise, no. Okay. I feel like I wouldn't. I feel like maybe a 12-year-old would be fine. But that said, I was playing GTA at like 10, so I have like a warped view of maybe you'd be fine. I don't know. But there's definitely some stuff that happens in it that I find really creepy. Like that I kept thinking while watching it, like, damn, Dad, what do kids think of what just happened here? It's also just very political. Like there are absolutely episodes that are mostly just political figures talking, very much like The Phantom Menace, which I guess kids still very much enjoy. But it's just like a lot of that stuff that I'm really surprised that it's marketed as a kid's show because it's comes across as so mature. But I'm trying to very quickly catch up to get to the new season that I guess Disney finally allowed or greenlit after canceling the show when they took Lucasfilm over, which is a huge bummer because The Clone Wars is awesome and people really like it. Awesome. So trying to catch up. Trying to avoid spoilers. Please, no spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers at all in chat, please, in comments or anything. Because, yeah, I think I've seen a lot of people give reactions to the ending without being spoilery. And it gives me serious FOMO. I'm sure it does for you as well, watching it now.
Well, again, I'm just not paying attention to any of the current conversation about what's happening. And like, I don't want to see any of it. Get all of it away from me. I'm just trying to catch up.
Some of the articles came out and like, I follow Sam Witwer who voices Maul in it. And he kind of like just defined quite vaguely what the finale was about. And I was like, dude, rewatching the entire Clone Wars. I think I watched them for the first time in 2015, but I watched them in the order of release. I went all for season 1. I'm a bit like that though. Even if someone says start at book 2 or start from season 2, I want to know all of it.
I usually would too. I guess I didn't for this because I had been told by multiple people that season 1 is really childish and they were like worried it would put me off it because I'm a person who doesn't watch a lot of TV. So it's like maybe I wouldn't have stuck with it. I don't know.
But what?
When did it first come out, Maud?
2008. For the first season of that one, yeah. But the what the Clone Wars do is flesh out the best part, the best storylines from between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. So you're tackling these really, really big things, and you know where it's going to go. But it really goes into Anakin's turning to the dark side and his relationship with Padme. So like that alone, all of it really, really makes the prequels, the movies, better because they've fleshed out so much that's taken in here. I love them, so I'm really enjoying this watch through, but I am doing it in the chronological order for the first time.
How's that? Would you recommend that over watching it in order of release?
The problem is if you're binging, you have to stop and then look up and then go through every single time. So it's, you can't autoplay it. But a lot of the time it'll be like, to start it off, it's 301, then 303, and then 1118, and then you go 101, 102, 103, 104. So it's like only a couple, and then it'll have a long run, and then it'll skip again.
But, yeah.
I haven't super noticed the order of it being chronologically told. I noticed more when... you know, you're starting to follow a storyline, then all of a sudden it's on Yoda, and then all of a sudden it's over with the clones again, and you're like, what?
Yeah, it does take a lot.
I'm so pumped for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's been great so far, and, like, one thing that I love, at least watching it in order of release, has been that the art style gets consistently better. Like, it's a really pretty show. I had seen a lot of Rebels, and comparing the two is, like, I love the way the Clone Wars develops as it goes on. I feel like it even looks more mature than Rebels does. But also the animation gets better, choreography gets better. It's been cool watching the show obviously have quality improvements or budget improvements that really pay off. Yeah. Also, George Lucas's daughter wrote a lot of it, which is really cool.
Oh, that's very cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun fact. She wrote a bunch of episodes.
Hey, Amy, are we moving over to Bombs Way for Q&A? Are you going to ask us some sexy questions?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. You really am. Yes, and we'll also get a Twitch question from you guys watching right now. But this one is from Bomber Backer Terry. Question is, what are five movies that had an impact on you and influenced who you've become today?
Ooh, what a big question. Should we, for time's sake, maybe try to get it down to one, unless anyone can rattle off five? I can list, for me, probably Neverending Story, Wizard of Oz, Gone with the Wind, Moulin Rouge, and Titanic. Maybe there, and that's literally just me pulling movies out of my butt that I feel like were very influential in my life in different phases
in
of my life.
Nice
movies in my butt.
Odd shape, a lot of lube.
I think the movies that had the biggest influence and impact on me: The Princess Bride, number one. Star Wars movies, absolutely. The OT trilogy had a huge impact on my life. They're probably, those movies probably had the biggest impact on my life. So that's technically four movies that I've just said. I'm sure there's another old school one, like The Labyrinth or...
Did you say Willow?
Willow's
so good.
So good. Willow's having a big impact on my life because if I ever have a daughter, I'm calling her Alora.
Nice.
Yeah. I like it. Alana, five movies?
Look, I don't watch a lot of movies. I only really caught up on all the greats more recently. Like, I watched The Godfather, I think, this year after, you know, never having seen it. Pulp Fiction is really recent. Ghostbusters is really recent. So I just have, like I said, I play video games. I don't watch film and TV. So I have a tough time answering any of this, and my whole life has been that way. But I kind of want to say, and I feel like it's such an easy answer, and it's because of the time that it came out, the Harry Potter films. You know, everyone likes Harry Potter. Everyone read the books. It's not like it's an uncommon answer, but I feel like I very much aged alongside those films coming out. And I remember watching the final movie. It was my final year of high school, seeing it with my parents in the theater and just being like, oh my God, I can't believe this chapter that has spanned my entire childhood is ending at the same time that I'm leaving school. I'm hoping I'm remembering that year correctly, but I'm pretty sure I am. But it was just like this thing that I'd waited for the books year after year after year, and then waited for the movies year after year after year with everyone else, you know. And just that it was just such an important cultural thing that I grew up alongside. I feel kind of similarly with The Lord of the Rings, to be honest. But yeah, that's my answer.
That's so interesting hearing that the movies were at the same age as you, because when the books were releasing, it was
books were the same age for my sister too. Actually, I'm gonna make sure that's right though.
Books were the same age for my sister and Alana. Then I have to ask you, when kind of the whole story that is the Harry Potter verse as we know it ended, did that make you really sad? Because in a way, it was like a part of your life chapter was ending.
Yeah, for sure. I just looked it up. So I graduated in 2010 and Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 came out in 2011. So it was literally right after I finished school. It felt like I was leaving my childhood behind. Mm-hmm. Like I was leaving this wizarding world behind of like school. And, you know, it's a series that focuses on being in school and then leaving. And I guess that movie not being in the school at the same year that I'm not in the school was just like a very weird cultural shift, I think. I don't know how it would have influenced me. I just remember being profoundly sad sitting in a movie theater watching those credits scroll in a way that no other movie has done that to me, just because of the investment of time and impact that that series had on pretty much anyone who would have been my age, I think. It was weird.
Then you just listed 8 movies, so extra bonus question.
Yes,
extra bonus points for the question.
Yay!
Nailed it.
And then another quick question from the Catnip Ninja. What is your favorite American Office character?
Well, I'm going to say Dwight. I feel like it's easy, but I really love him.
Beats.
Maude, do you have a favorite American Office character?
I don't watch it.
You've never seen it?
Ever?
I think I've seen it because a previous boyfriend was obsessed with it and always had it on, but I wasn't watching it.
What's Steve Carell's character's name?
Michael Scott.
He's so funny. I think he, as an actor, is hilarious. So his comedic timing on everything is so funny. That while I like Pam and I like Jim and I like Dwight, I like any scene with Steve Carell in it just makes me laugh out loud. So.
Except that Scott's Tots episode. Shout out to that episode.
Scott's Tots.
Ringy.
Not a good time.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Well, thank you guys in chat, and thank you at all the Geek Bombers over on the Patreon for your questions. This was awesome. Thank you.
Really appreciate that one. We're going to wrap things up here, though. Next is going to be reading, so don't go anywhere because it is a full set with the PW and Ara. We're going to have Alana back to talk about what she's reading at the moment, and it's pretty cool. But Trisha, it's your turn. Take it away.
Yay! Thank you and welcome to the new subs. I see we have Nabahe. PSWE 2008 gifted a sub. Thank you so much, Classy Librarian. Thank you for the bits. So thank you guys and welcome everybody who is here today. You are rock stars.
Amy, who was yours in the office?
Huh?
Who was Amy's favorite office character?
Amy, who's your favorite office character?
Michael Scott works for me too.
Okay, perfect. Now this time I remembered to do that in between. So we're now officially reset to move into reading.
Fantastic. Hello, this is Power Up, and let's get powered up together. This is Trisha Hershberger. My name is Maude Garrett. We have joined forces so that we could talk about all playing, watching, and reading. We're up to the reading component. Thank you so much if you're watching live, or if you're watching this in installments on the video on demand for Geek Bomb, give that a subscribe. Head over to twitch.tv, /Trisha Hershberger. Give that a sub or a follow.
Hey,
let's all join this amazing community. But this is a guest episode. Every other week, we get an amazing guest on so that they can share their power. And we are up to the reading portion of Alana Pierce's trio for Power. Let's get stuck into it. What's your reading, girl?
Right now, I'm reading, well, honestly, a couple of things. I'm still reading the Wheel of Time series.
Ooh, what
which
book
we've spoken about before. Six. Taking my sweet time on the middle of this one. Ooh, boy, it's really a slog. But I'm still there. I'm still getting through it occasionally. I'm also reading Save the Cat. For anyone who doesn't know, there are two versions, I believe. Maybe there are more. There is one version of Save the Cat that is for screenwriting and one version that is for writing novels. And it's basically a much more businessy look at how to execute on writing a screenplay or a novel. It's controversial. You know, a lot of people say, like, don't let this be the only thing that you read, but also just has a lot of tips from A, someone who's really experienced and has published a lot of screenplays, and B, a lot of quotes from other people who have also done so on really how to actually write something that would maybe actually be published, which isn't necessarily something I even have intention of doing. It's just an interesting look at that side of things. Yeah, it might be. We'll see.
Career change or a new career trajectory?
Hoping I can just do all of them at once. Now, I do have a plan to, by the time I turn 26, I want to have finished a book or a screenplay, and I've been writing them for ages just for fun, but no interest in publishing them. So it's like, I want to finish something by that time because I have a bunch of unfinished or half-finished things, but I've never really cared about other people reading it, which I know is weird, and I'm trying to get myself out of that headspace where I'm like, well, I wrote this for me. Why should anyone else have to read it? But that seems silly to not share it. So Save the Cat is definitely helping with the idea that maybe I should try to publish something. But yeah, it's a super interesting read for anyone who has any interest in how to kind of get started, get a good foundation. Just don't let it be the only thing that you read. And the other one is I'm rereading The Batman Who Laughs, which is because I just got a Prime 1 statue of The Batman Who Laughs, which is like over $1,000 statue that I've had on pre-order for ages, and it just arrived this week. And I was like, I should reread that book. Yeah. Well, it's Prime One, but shipped by Sideshow. Yeah. So it is massive. It's huge. It's like, it's enormous and very heavy. I haven't been able to unbox it yet.
I can't believe you got it.
Well, I collect, for anyone who doesn't know, specifically weird or creepy Batman statues. That's my thing. I have a lot of toys, but that is like the one thing that I have the largest collection of, is weird, creepy Batman. And the Batman Who Laughs, while the character is not technically Batman, is a take on Batman. that's the point. He's basically supposed to be... I don't want to get into it too much. What I will say is just I highly recommend reading the comic. It's a lot of fun. I love every time that DC does multiverse stuff, like Flashpoint. I love all of that stuff. They do a really good job of giving you these like really quick kind of one-off runs with different spins on characters. You know, that means you don't have to get really invested and read 1,000 issues of something for a full arc with all these different characters. So definitely recommend checking it out. But the character is basically an alternate universe combination of, it's specifically Bruce Wayne and the Joker. So not necessarily actually Batman, but it's what would happen if you combine Joker and Bruce Wayne and put him in a different world. So
someone who wants to be a detective has millions and billions of dollars at their disposal, but is a little bit deranged?
Pretty much. Yeah, cool. More or less. Dangerous. It's very dark. I believe the first appearance was in 2017. So it's not super old. But yeah, just a really fun read. The statue's so cool. So I just, I wanted to get through it again. And the art's really, a lot of interesting stuff they do with lighting, where I feel like a lot of, sometimes the more popular modern comics can look very samey. DC's also been taking some risks there lately, especially. So very on board with that as well. It's really cool. Definitely recommend checking it out.
So I'm like so obsessed with the fact that you got that specific statue. I feel like the first time I ever saw it was at Comic-Con. It was the first year they had it on display at Comic-Con. And I swear I went back to the booth like 25 times just to look at it, because it's so horrifically creepy. And
it is, yeah.
What do I look up to find a picture of it?
Beautiful.
Probably the Batman Who Laughs statue. I can tell you how tall it is if I look up the size of it. I mean, all I know is the box is goddamn huge. The Batman Who Laughs statue. Yeah, it's massive. I've wanted it since the first time I saw it, which was...
Well, it has a payment plan.
I think it's probably sold out.
Yeah, I want to live
vicariously. Maybe it's not. It does say pre-orders are still there.
I didn't even look at how much it costs because I have no room in my house for it. Where are you going to put it?
I don't have room for it either, Trisha. We'll figure it out. Like, the last statue I have is this Ronan Geralt, also from Sideshow. Yeah. And that one, I didn't even find room for. So I'm like, where am I going to put this thing? And this thing is huge. So it's 33 inches tall, 18.7 inches wide. Its depth is 36 inches. It's massive. It's 88 pounds.
Wow.
It's huge. I think that I'm probably going to sit it on a floor somewhere. Usually I would have all of my statues, you know, on a bookshelf, or I have a bunch of them on top of my kitchen cabinets. But this seems like the kind of statue that is cool enough to be sort of made like a centerpiece on a floor, like any other statue, you know, like people who have actual real taste in art have their statues sitting on the floor or whatever. So I'm just going to have this one on the floor as a little centerpiece. It's insane. I'm very excited to open it. Have not done so yet. It's just reading the comic.
From like, I'm still in metric and I will never move from that, but it says it goes from like,
I don't know, inches either,
to 55 kilos.
Yeah, dude. It's big. It's that's real so big.
And it's like real 80, big. 84 centimeters high, which is, yeah, nearly a meter off the ground. Far
yep.
Out. That's amazing.
It's like half the size of me, pretty much. It's tall. Huge.
But yep. As someone who first, so did you say you were first drawn to the character Batman Who Laughs from the collectible, and that's what got you reading the comics, or were you already aware of who Batman
No, I had
who
read
Laughs
the
is?
Comic first.
Okay.
I feel like I might have seen the statue for the first time at a Comic Con as well. But I've just had this thing with this particular statue where I've encountered it multiple times, and every time I've been like, I must have you. So like, I'll just stare at it for a long time and be like, my God, you're so beautiful. So I saw it in Japan. And same thing happened. I'm just in a toy store, just staring at the basically like pre-release version of the figure that they have, just like patting the glass, like, oh my God, it's so good. And then, yeah, finally pulled the plug, pre-ordered it, finally arrived. Everyone will have it shipped. And it's funny, like, I guess because I haven't published that I have it, because I just don't know really what to do with it or how to unbox it or anything. So it's just sitting in a box right now. I just don't know what to do. I guess people keep tagging me in pictures of other people who are getting it, and it's driving me nuts because they're like, "Have you seen this? This seems like a thing you would like." I'm like, "Yes, I like. I just can't open mine yet." Just like, shut up. Stop showing it to me, because I feel like when I do have it out of the box and displayed somewhere, I'm gonna do the same thing. Where I'm just gonna stare at it all the time and be like, "Damn, so good though. It's so pretty. Very creepy."
It's very creepy.
I always wonder what would happen if I dated a dude who wasn't a nerd and he went to my apartment. He'd be like, "What the fuck is wrong with this bitch? Oh my god! What
if you're dating a guy who kills that?" Break up with him.
I did that once. I dated a guy that asked me to please like put my toys in a closet or somewhere out of view because they were toys and we're adults. And needless to say, that relationship did not last very long.
Gross. Look at all this cool nerd shit you have behind you. Is that?
Oh, this is like 2% of it. I keep like, when you're talking about all these, I almost want to show you. Did you get any of the Project Triforce Batman collectibles, Alana?
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, so I have a bunch of those up there, which, again, are, like, massive, and they're kind of up on a shelf in my closet, and, like, the Black Arrow is where the curtain rod would go above my dining room table in my living room, the Weta Black Arrow replica. Like, I just have huge collectible stuff all over my house, and fortunately, I married someone that was like, yeah, in addition to that, can we also get, and I was like, see, this is
my goal if I own a house, is just, you know, most people have things that are nicely decorated. I just want mine to have nerd stuff everywhere. And I had to, this is like a little bit dark to bring up, but I had to write a will recently because I was just very sick last year. I was fainting a lot. And my mom was like, listen, I know this is messed up, but you're in America. I don't know what they're going to do with all your stuff. Write a will. So I wrote a line in there saying that my mom, whose home is basically decorated like an IKEA catalog, it's like very sparse and like color coordinated, I wrote a line being like, you have to prominently display the baby from the Death Stranding collector's edition somewhere in your
God.
He was like, deal with that, it's in my will, you can't not do it or I'll haunt you forever. To inconvenience her forever.
That is amazeballs. So you have the Death Stranding baby.
I do have Death Stranding baby, yes. Big fan. Got a lot of stuff. Not a lot of space.
Creepy.
That's a lot. My husband and I literally just last night were talking about getting Weta's tree ant, which I'm trying to, I'll have to look up how tall it is. Have you seen it?
Oh, Weta tree ant.
Let me just look
up. Is it like an actual tree beard? Or?
Yeah.
Tree beard is so dope. Look at him.
Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah, look how big it is, though. Look at the size of it.
Oh, I don't know.
If it's there's a Treebeard bust that's only 18 inches. That's not too bad.
No, the Master's Collection one.
Master's Collection one. Oh, I see. Oh, my God. He's so cool. Oh, my God. This is like $2,000.
That's double the price of the other one.
It's over 40 inches tall.
It is. That's so sick, though. Oh, my God.
Hang on a lot.
Wait, or you could buy out. A car. It's sold out, but yeah, my husband's like, so my birthday's coming up.
Rules. I vote you do it. I vote you do it. Like, Maud's the angel on your shoulder. She's like, you could get something useful. No, tree man.
It's so much money. It's so much money, but like maybe infinitely worth it. And then I could do something similar to what Alana did and gift it to my mother, whose house is very prim and proper.
Mm-hmm. It's the ultimate troll.
That's perfect. That is very wise and sage advice, Alana.
thank you.
Yes,
there you have it. If you need comic recommendations and you like things a little bit twisted and weird, give Batman, what's it called again?
Batman Who Laughs. Batman Who Laughs.
Oh, good-o. The Batman Who Laughs. Try that one out. Did that creep you out, Amy? Did that get you?
Really? Yeah.
Well, I have a very wide smile.
No. It's the eyes.
It is the eyes.
Definitely the eyes.
Okay, cool. I've got crazy eyes. Actually, someone commented that on every single video for about 2.5 years that I'm it's like the hot crazy scale and that I'm like the craziest of them all.
Right on the crux. That's where you want to be, man.
You can see in her eyes that she's crazy. And I'm like, that's just the fucking true, is it?
Go big or go home.
Anyway, on that note, let's do one last little bombs away and ask a couple of questions before we hit the road.
Yeah. Okay, so this one's from BomberBacker Seb_X. This one's a little bit tricky, so feel free to answer how you'd like. What's the one property you loved in all three, playing, watching, and reading?
I think a lot of properties don't actually fit over a lot of the tiers, because I love Zelda, but there has not been a movie. Even though there is, I think I've got a graphic novel box set.
I think I'm going to go to Witcher.
The Witch is a great answer.
Oh, that is now playing, watching, and reading. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, or really, you can just say Lord of the Rings, because Shadow of War and Shadow of Mordor were fantastic.
Such good games.
I'm going to say Batman, because like Batman Arkham Asylum is one of my favorite games ever. Batman comics are my favorite comics ever. Dark Knight is one of my favorite movies ever. So it's like, it's not that they're just like things that I like across the board. It's things that I adore across the board. I have a Batman tattoo. I'm a bit of a fan. So I'm going to say Batman.
You like the Batman.
I like the Batman.
All right. Star Wars. Star Wars movies, the original trilogy, fantastic. Knights of the Old Republic is one of my favorite games of all time. So I have delved into books and comics from there. And if I had to shout out one, it would be Lost Stars by Claudia Gray, which is an amazing novel that is canon.
Awesome. And this next question is from Twitch viewer Hero170. What is your favorite literary genre?
Fantasy.
Fantasy.
Fantasy. Done. Yep. That was easy.
Yep.
I actually want to one up that question. What genre have you not really gotten into, but you're interested in and want to try more of?
I'd like to read more Lovecraftian stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Not even necessarily from Lovecraft himself, but just Lovecraftian, because I do really like the concept of like one of his core themes being something that is knowledge, that the having the knowledge of the thing, just the pure understanding of it, drives you insane slowly. I think that that's a really cool concept. So more, I'd read more of that.
Yeah. I'm seeing a theme here, but yeah. What about you, Trish?
Yeah, that's a great answer. What would I like to read more of? Maybe more nonfiction. I read a lot of fiction and I love it and it's awesome. But yeah, maybe learning a little bit more about history. Maybe a good, based on reality, historical drama would be good for my reading.
Mm-hmm. I've got like 5 nonfiction books that I should read, but I'm the same. I really struggle with nonfiction. I wouldn't mind getting into more thriller.
Mm.
Like, I hear Rachel Hine on Nerdist talk about like all of this gothic noir kind of literature, and I was like, man, that sounds sick. So one day.
Pick up Lock and Key.
I still have... What was that?
I said pick up Lock and Key. You want to get more into thriller?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good point. But, you know, I've got 13 books of Wheel of Time, and I've still got, like, 17 books of all the other series, because fantasy writers can't write one book.
Real slow, too. They take a long time. They drag them out. A lot of words.
Dude, I'm reading Dune at the moment.
Oh, everyone's reading Dune at the moment.
Right, I was just going to say that.
Because there's a series coming out, right?
Yeah, there's a new movie, and I think they're going to drop a trailer soon-ish. And they just released the new look and the new edition, and it is pretty.
Ooh,
nice. Is pretty. Look at that.
That's really nice. Look at that cool pages. I'm into it.
Yes.
Matches your headphones. Very nice.
Yay!
And your nails, I think. You have blue nails as well.
Oh, I've got neutral colors on at the moment. Stick-on nails have saved my lockdown.
I was just going to say, Maud. I have naked nails. How do you have nails right now?
You just stick them on, guys. CVS, Impress Nails. You're welcome. You can't have an old podcast without one beauty recommendation, at least. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing not only your reading, but also your playing and your watching that you're currently doing in lockdown at the moment. If people want to learn more about you, discover you, or get more obsessed with you, where can people find you?
A, thank you for having me. It was a great time. I appreciate it. B is my handle on everything is at Charalanazad, which nobody knows how to spell. Don't worry about it. It's my name in the middle of Charizard, if that helps. If not, it's fine. It's whatever. Figure it out.
Remember when you were going to change it? Because you're like, oh, I'm starting to learn that it's really, really hard. And you're like,
yeah,
I'm trying to figure out a new
I've
handle.
Had it for too long. And it's also, you know, I studied marketing as part of my degree, and people... one of the things that was like very ingrained in my head is that it's a very recognizable text. If you see the text of my name, you know exactly what it is without having to read the whole thing, which they always say is like a very efficient form of digital marketing. So it's very handy to have, because most people aren't going to need to say it out loud.
Cool. Charizardnum. Yeah.
That's me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been so very fun, Alana.
Yeah, I had a good time.
Glad to hear it. Guys, make sure you do subscribe to Geek Bomb. Maybe, and make sure if you are on Twitch right now, give it a follow or a sub. Really do appreciate that. And if you do feel like supporting the show, patreon.com/geekbomb, because we've got some fun and exciting things happening over there too. Trisha, thank you for joining me this week and getting involved with Power as always, and thank you for giving us your platform, Twitch, and all your beautiful dragon riders.
And thank you for hanging out with me for this beautiful hour and some change, Maud Garrett. It's always a pleasure.
Ah, shush you. We'll be back next week where it's going to be just Trisha and I doing our Power and updating you from what it was 2 weeks ago, and hopefully we've got some more amazing recommendations to make. Until then, thank you so much for joining us.